Mira Wilson, empowering parents to do what works for you with your unique family, even if that looks a little odd to others, keeping you company and unlocking useful mindset tools and gems of wisdom as we grow and learn together. My name's Kate. Welcome to the podcast. Hello and welcome to episode 9, The Mistakes I've Made Raising Neurodivergent Children. And there are many. I've narrowed it down to 6 in this episode. The last one being the most important and crucial. The one that I personally think will transform your life as a family and your child's life and your own life in so many ways. The magic ingredient. So the first mistake I've made is not lowering my expectations. I think it's so easy if your child is neurodiverse, they haven't got a disability that you can see, that is visible, then it's not obvious. And without risking, but like sounding very, very ignorant and know how annoying it is when people say, it doesn't look autistic. It doesn't look like he has ADHD. No, but I mean, like, even in the beginning stages, having denial, being in a bit of denial and thinking, well, most of the time when my children are at home or they're doing things, they're happy, they were behaving and do behave like any other neurotypical child. So treating them and expecting them to be fine with haircuts, be fine with going somewhere immediately after school or on a Friday night when they're really tired, and expecting them to be able to cope at parties and busy environments and not actually stopping to think, hang on a minute, they may well find that hard because they will be overstimulated or overwhelmed, and not taking that into consideration, which is, I'm cross with myself for doing that. Obviously, I've got better over time, but we all live and learn and figure these things out and work out for ourselves what works best for our children and our families. And in the same way, not being flexible. I remember talking to he would have been 3 at the time, and because he was more or less non-verbal, he did speak and then he regressed, as a lot of children with autism do. And I think we'd moved house and had another baby as well, his younger brother, so I assumed that that had a lot to do with it, which he probably did as well. But I used to speak to him in a very, very babyish way, like you would speak to a child much, much younger. And that was what felt natural. That's what seemed to work. And that helped him to understand what I was trying to communicate. But then questioning myself and thinking, I shouldn't be talking to him like he's a baby. He was going to think that I think he's a baby. And whereas looking back, I needed to lower my expectations. I needed to talk to him in that very, like, simple, childish way. I wasn't trying to belittle him or make him feel less intelligent or anything than his brothers, but that is what worked for him and helped his communication. So things like that, when you need to lower your expectations, I would try to live life as I'd already lived before, like going out to meet friends at soft play or going to parties and things, and then obviously having more children and the needs being more challenging and the needs becoming more obvious, this became harder and harder. And it was then I had to really take a step back and think, okay, this isn't working. Like meeting a really good friend at a national park with all 3 of my children, her children like doing all the activities and getting involved in everything and staying literally like from the minute the park opens till the end of the day, that isn't going to work for us. Like we want to spend time with them. That for us wouldn't work. And having children still that want to run off and have no sense of danger and risks, and me being a single parent as well, that's not feasible, that's not safe, and that's not a sensible decision. Whereas I was trying to just live my life and thinking, no, they want these experiences, it's all fantastic. But no, certain things, yes, I've become very good, as I'm sure you have, knowing what works, which places you can go when you're on your own, which places you can go when you've got backup and you've got grandparents with you or your partner, and which places you can stay for a limited time, or the places where you go early when it's quiet or late. A lot of the SEN sessions are really late, aren't they? Like at different parks and trampoline parks and things like that, they'll have a session, but it's like 6 till 8. And I'm thinking, there's no way that's ever going to work for my children going out that late when they're just getting ready for bed at that time. But anyway, just adapting, and I've got better and better at that. Number two, not celebrating wins. And I'm talking like small wins. It doesn't have to be, yeah, you celebrate if your child's got an award or got a swimming badge or whatever they've achieved at school or in clubs, or being able to go to the toilet and not be in nappies, or being able to put their own shoes on, anything like that. Not like taking a minute and celebrating that and seeing how far you'd come. In the early days, I was very much like, we should be doing this and we need to be doing this, and we should be doing more. But actually go, no, hang on, for us, this is amazing. Like for my middle child, how fantastic he is at the climbing wall when he's gone to a party and there's a climbing wall. Just taking a minute to celebrate that and go, you know what? There's a lot of things he finds very tricky communicating with others socially. He finds that really hard, as much as he tries, and playing football helps him to connect with others. But for him to be so good at climbing and reaching the top gives him this huge boost of self-esteem and feeling like he can, that's something he can do, he can join in with his peers, he is good, if not better than a lot of them. And you know, it's not about being better than everyone else, it's about having something that you've done and you've achieved. It's fantastic. For another one of my children, getting themselves dressed in the morning, like them being very, very anxious and reluctant, like being able to dress themselves. And some people think, yeah, oh, my child could dress themselves from the age of 4, blah, blah, blah. But for some children, it's so, they are so anxious about getting up and going to school. Yes, if they were going to getting up because they were going to a party or somewhere they wanted to go, then maybe they would be happy and get themselves dressed, no problem. But for a child that is super reluctant to go to school, then getting themselves dressed is hard, and the whole task is like overwhelming. That might look like, to us, often does to us, giving them one or maybe two items of clothing to put on, because faced with like a whole pile of clothes and saying, right, there's your uniform, can you put that on please, is too much. It's too overwhelming, especially when they've first woken up to think, oh my gosh, I've got to do this, I don't want to put on first, and it's too much. But celebrating that, like, wow, if we've gone for a point of me dressing all of the children to actually now they're starting to put on items and clothing for themselves. And hopefully you'll be able to relate, like these small things, which to other people and certainly parents of neurotypical children, they'll think, well, by the age of 10, you should be able to dress yourself. It's not as simple as that. There's so much more to it than just saying you should be able to do it because you're old enough. You know, or you do it, they do it at PE at school. Yeah, but that's different. It's a very different context when perhaps they are masking in school and they have punishments if they don't do these things. So maybe they're performing the role out of fear. It's not as simple. Number three is a huge one. That's reacting to my children's maybe talking back, or being rude, or them doing something, especially when they're doing something for a reaction. The ADHDers among us know when your child's trying to get that dopamine hit, they don't even realise they're doing it half the time, that they're getting that dopamine hit in a negative way, because they know they'll get a rise out of that adult. And it's interesting to see how still professionals can like rise to it. And you think if you just ignored that, you wouldn't have this whole explosion on your hands. But sometimes not reacting has been one of the best lessons I've learned. And it's hard. It's not always straightforward, you know, especially if they're doing something quite destructive, because they're so in this fight or flight and they're so like in this zone, not thinking logically, and they're trying to get a reaction because they need that boost, and they feel that that's the way that they're going to get connection out of an adult. Maybe that's the only way they can get really attention. And I have one of my children in particular who comes out of school like really angry and will do things because he's in such a rage when he comes out of school. Often that's a sign that he's had a good day, funnily enough, because he's had to mask all day and control himself to such an extent that when he comes out of school, he's really angry or really struggling, and he'll do things like deliberately knock things over in the car or do something to annoy his brothers or immediately get into an argument with his brothers. And it's then when it's difficult, but it's not reacting, because by not reacting, they then diffusing the situation and putting the fire out rather than fueling the fire, because trying to correct them and discipline, whatever you want to call it, in that moment is not helpful. As the saying goes, you don't try and teach a child how to swim when they are drowning. That's not helpful for anybody. You distract or you give them space to feel what they feel, but you certainly don't react to how they are, and you're giving them the control as well. You lose your control when you react to their behavior and their words. So that's really, that has been so huge in transforming my relationship with my child as well. Just that simple thing. I say simple because it's not. When you're in the moment and they're doing all these things to try and get a reaction, it's really hard. And like, obviously, if they're doing something really dangerous, you have to say something. You can't just sit there and watch them run into a road or, you know, smash them. You have got to step in there for their safety. But yeah, use your discretion. Number four, assuming that everybody else will understand what you're doing, why you're doing it, and accept you and approve of your parenting and actions. Because a big lesson, huge lesson, as I'm sure you can relate, is that a lot of other people, onlookers, strangers, other parents will be judgmental and won't understand why you do particular things, because often through the eyes of society, you are seen as a terrible parent for the things that you do. You allow more screen time maybe than other people. You allow your children to eat not at a table. You allow your child to or maybe eat at a table for just a short few minutes and then run off and do something. You don't have your child sat down doing homework every night. Whatever it is that they view as very highly important in their lives, your child's not doing it, or you're not disciplining your child for doing something in the moment, not realizing that there's methods in your madness. You're not just like allowing your children to walk all over you. There, you know when to pick your battles. You know what works for your child, what doesn't, what's worth talking to them about in the moment, what's worth letting go. Like if eating is a really big issue and you struggle to get them to eat and to eat certain foods, then you know how mealtimes need to look in order to get your child to eat. Their child might sit for, you know, 45 minutes up to an hour for a meal or with the family, and no problem with that. That's great, fantastic, wonderful. But don't be surprised if they turn around and judge you and think, oh my goodness, look at Timmy's mum. She allows him to eat in his bedroom after school, and it's the biggest mistake is just for me is thinking that other people would understand what I'm doing. And I wanted that, as we often do, wanting that like approval, like, look at me, I'm doing the best, everybody, like, I'm doing a fantastic job, even if you can't see it, kind of trying to, thinking you've got to explain yourself or thinking you've got to prove yourself to other strangers and other people. And like when your child is having a meltdown in public and things, oh, what's everybody going to think? What's everyone going to say? And, oh, they just all think I'm such a terrible parent. And yeah, it's some people, you can talk to them and explain them, great, if that's appropriate. But a lot of the time, it's not worth your time or energy. You just focus on your child, your family, you, and regulating your emotions and doing what's best for you, and just let everybody else think what they like. And that's really hard, because our like primal survival instinct, going back to like when we were in tribes, is wanting to be liked, wanting to be accepted. So everything that's going on within your family is maybe going against that. And particularly for people like me who are introverted or can lack confidence, that's really hard, because it's rejection. And that's nobody like goes out looking for rejection or really particularly enjoys it. But when you're getting that, like on a daily basis or regularly, that's hard. But I think only through experience, unless you are super, super, super confident and you've never had a problem with this. But I think with time you grow and develop and you get this sense of, I'm doing the best that I can with the tools that I have. I'm doing the best for my child. I'll just let everybody else do and think what they like, and it doesn't affect you as much. And by the way, that's why I have my little cards, my little awareness cards on my website, because you can just give them to strangers. And that's one way of like stopping people staring at you and explaining your child's behaviour in a very simple way, getting the other people to leave you alone and raising awareness. So they can be downloaded for free on my website, neuroawesome.co.uk, or you can buy the physical cards in like packs of 10. So that's another tool as well. But otherwise, forget them, as hard as that may be, especially for people pleasers like me. Number 5 is the mistakes that I've made routines. Now, this is a tricky one, because like the children with autism obviously like routine and like that. And same with ADHD as well. Often if you've got children who are neurodiverse, they like the set routine. But at the same time, if you have got a child who has ADHD, they like a little bit of spontaneousness, if that is a word. You know, they're going a bit out of routine and giving that boost of dopamine by doing things in a different way. And all the mistakes I've made is maybe sticking to routines too rigidly and expecting children be able to cope with going on a day out or on a holiday immediately after school finishes or the day after. No, we've learnt you need a day to recuperate, or a couple of days to recuperate and recover from the tiringness of school and behaving and performing in school before you attempt to do activities that require lots of energy and changes of routine and environment and things. Same goes for trying to do too much on a Sunday. No, Sunday has become a day where we have to have, certainly the afternoon, just very much like chill out. It has to be ready for school the next day. That has a big impact on how the week goes, depending on how our Sunday is spent. Expecting my children to be able to go places where there are queues or long wait times. No, 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 no. I've learnt that this just doesn't work at all. I even when we get to school, I have to time leaving the school, arriving at school, so that we have like a minute or a couple of minutes to get out of the car and walk to the door. Otherwise, they just can't wait. They they just can't cope with having to wait outside the door to be able to go into school, and it causes all kinds of problems. So that kind of forward planning, the same with like waiting at airports, waiting at different parks for activities and things, having things like, if you're able to get like the queue jumpers and the certain passes you can get, the carer passes and disability passes are fantastic to having been able to jump the queues and reduce wait time. Don't feel guilty about that, because if you've got a child who can't wait, it's so worth it, because otherwise you stood in the queue having a really hard time waiting, you're getting yourself so stressed out, they're getting themselves stressed out, and it can ruin your day and really put a dampener on the day because it's so stressful for them just having to wait and not understanding that they have got to wait their turn. Having to forward plan again with things like safe foods, when we're away from home, having places where I know that I can get hold of the safe foods for my child that does have a difficulty eating anything else, like knowing that we have the right foods and I have packed enough snacks and things that he will eat. Otherwise, that makes things hard for him and hard for everybody else. So it's that forward planning and things that I've learned over time that is absolutely crucial for setting ourselves up for success as a family. And number six, the one that I think is absolutely key, the one thing, if you just take away one thing from this, connection. I know I go on about this, but what do I mean by that? Well, your relationship and your connection with your child, how you interact with each other. That bond that you have between each other, and knowing that you are the safe space for your child, so allowing them to express their emotions and allowing them to know that if they've broken something or they've got a problem, that they are able to talk to you, like allowing them to tell you even the small things, so that when then there is a problem, then they know that they can come to you. They know that you are their safe space. You've got that connection with them. You don't want them thinking, oh my God, my mum's going to be so angry with me. I can't tell her. I've got nobody to talk to about this. You want that connection there. And that's hard when you've got a child, like I said earlier, that is trying to get a reaction out of you, that is trying to get that dopamine hit, that is like angry at the world because they feel so misunderstood. That's hard, but I think working on that connection makes things so much easier and can transform your child. That might seem hard to believe, and I think if someone has sat me down years ago and said that to me, like this one simple thing, connection can change so many things, I thought it's not as simple as that. But it's not easy, but it's worth the time and effort. And with that, if you can involve movement, especially if you're having a hard time, your child's having a meltdown or is really angry or something's just happened, if you can involve movement with that, like let's walk and talk or let's go and do this job while we discuss, if that's helpful, it could be because you're moving that emotion, you are shifting the emotion and the energy out of them by getting their body to move, so that's helpful too. But for example, when I was before I was a newly qualified, I was teacher training and I was in a particular school, like a really lovely class. And the teacher was obviously helping me with different ideas and tips to how to become a better teacher and be able to meet all the criteria that I needed in order to qualify as a primary teacher. And there was this one child, lovely little boy, who had a lot of like complex needs and global delay and all different things. And I'd planned these fantastic lessons with all different resources, all the children engaged. But this one boy, obviously, because he found it really hard to access what I was teaching, and he didn't have a one-to-one person all of the time, so he would quite often get up and walk around the room or disrupt the lesson or do something to distract the class, and it was really hard. I remember saying a few times to the teacher who was training me, like, what can I do to get him engaged? What can I do to get him almost to like comply? What do I, can I do to get him to sit and do what the rest of the children are doing? And I, like, I wanted this one thing, you know, this magic wand for her to say, yeah, just do this and then everything's going to be fine and he's going to sit like a robot and comply with all the other kids. And what she kept saying to me is, you just got to get to know him. You've got to get to know. And I'm thinking, no, it can't be. No, I need something. Tell me, like, a strategy that I can use. But she was right. Like, the more you got to know him and spend time with him and really build up a bond, find out what he's interested in, spend time with him, like, in the classroom doing something while all the children were out at play, having that one-to-one little time, built up his trust with me and allowed him to get to know me and what I was like, and I could learn more about what he liked and what he didn't like. And that was the way that was the answer. That was getting, having that connection to him was everything. You know, that's not saying that every lesson after that was hunky-dory, but it made things a darn sight easier because we knew each other better. And that's all it is, like, finding out, well, what is it each child likes, even if it's like really, really boring to you, like spending some time doing the things that they like can make such a difference, like so much difference, like you wouldn't believe. And if you keep doing a bit of that, like, every week, a little bit every day, like, the difference you're going to see is just phenomenal. You'll find that they'll come and tell you things, or you'll find out what their sense of humour is like, or what they're interested in. They'll tell you more about their day and their friends and what's going on with them, and be more open with you. So it is well worth investing your time. Yeah, so even though I recognise it can be tricky, especially when you've got lots of other children too, if you haven't just got the one. Yeah. So they are the mistakes that I've made, the six things that I've had to change dramatically to get things working smoothly. So do find me on social media, NeuroAwesome, on Instagram and TikTok. Share the things that haven't worked for you, or the things that are now working for you and making your life so much easier too. And don't forget, you can get my awareness cards on neuroawesome.co.uk, which should be up and live very, very soon. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll speak to you next week. Goodbye.